This is Don Stoller.
Y'all come in one car? Should I work closer to this thing or what?
No, just stay where you are.
All right.
He's going to play some songs for you and tell you a little about what he does, and you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't want you to know too much about me. The truth, you'll never know. You know how all West Virginians are. They're not liars. They don't tell lies. They just stretch the truth a little bit, you know? I'm a little behind time here. I want to apologize for that. I was talking on the telephone to one of my folks back home there. They had a little mishap not too long ago, about 3 or 4 hours ago. And one of my sons called in and said that the fire had broke out in the bathroom there. Said they got it under control. They got it shut down before it got up to the house. This tune, it don't cost anything. You can put the fan on over there, though, Cooter, if you got one. Well, I'll tell you what, the way I see it, there's not too much to tell about myself, except I was born in West Virginia and half-raised over around Beckley, West Virginia, if you folks know where that's at. I use the word half-raised. I stole that from another good West Virginia friend of mine, Hawkshaw Hawkins. And every time I think of Elkins, West Virginia, I think of two good friends of mine who were in country music until they labeled it bluegrass, is Stoney Cooper and Will Malee. Is anybody familiar with them? And the Clinch Mountain Clan? They're from Elkins, West Virginia here. This is my first trip to Elkins. I'm having a ball since I've been here. Seen a lot of exciting things. I've cut a few records, and I really don't know who I've cut for. I cut about 3 albums for myself, and I'll always remember the one I did with Mr. Monroe on the Knee Deep in Bluegrass. That was a big thrill for me back in those days. It's when bluegrass was catching on, and folks were really getting down to study how bluegrass was born, who done it, and what have you. Of course, there's a lot of stories yet could be told about bluegrass music, I'm sure. Who started, who done the most for it, and that's another time and another story. I'll do a couple of my old mountain times tunes that I did and recorded. I always keep my music based on the old time way that I learned the music. I couldn't change it, but I think the next album I cut, when I find a real honest recording company, I'm going to cut it, and I think the title of it will be Why Change It, you know? Let me do you a little tune I remembered when I was about 3 years old and that I recorded for the Rounder record, folks. When I was 3, that was back in 1802, and I couldn't remember it all, and I did what research that I could on it, and I couldn't find out a thing about it. Nobody knew nothing, and why I'm the only one in West Virginia ever heard that song, I'll never know. But it was called I Picked Up a Hammer and I Knocked Him in the Head. It sounds like the legend of the Johnson Boys, and this was before the Johnson Boys. Times were rough and we didn't have bread. See that whistle pig running up the holler. Picked up a hammer and I knocked him in the head. Picked up a hammer and I knocked him in the head. Whistle pig, that's a groundhog. I worked all day digging taters and I was glad to get in bed. 7 little bugs were in there with me. I picked up a hammer and I knocked him in the head. Picked up a hammer and I knocked him in the head. That's big. I like. Old Bill Wilts lost and lost his sweetheart. Old Bill wished that he was dead. Thought I'd do old Bill a favor. I picked up a hammer and I knocked him in the head. Picked up a hammer and I knocked him in the head. I picked up a hammer and knocked him in the head. Picked up a hammer and I knocked him in the head.
Sully!
Boy, we're cooking now, huh? It's really warm. I almost ran. I walked at a fast gallop down the hill and all the way over where I was staying, got my banjo and ran back since dinner. That's a pretty long walk for a young kid like me. I get nervous, as I said, playing before a big crowd like this. But I believe the most I was ever nervous that really shocked me, and it's something that I'll always remember, is the day that I was going to elementary school and I graduated to the third grade. What a thrill that was for me, a mountain boy. You know, my hands were shaking so doggone bad, I could hardly hold my razor to shave for 3 weeks after that. I stayed in the third grade so doggone long, the woodpeckers finally ate the schoolhouse down. I liked this school teacher of mine, though, my elementary school teacher. I wound up dating her. I would have married her, but there was quite an age difference and age gap there. I was 37 and she's 22. Do you folks believe that West Virginia folks wear shoes? Yeah. Now, you know, don't get offended, because I'm not sitting here trying to say that because I'm from West Virginia and you're from New York City, there's a difference in us. There really ain't there. If you like good music, you like it. If you like to work in a garden or run a chainsaw or do woodwork, whatever, that's the kind of people, you know, that like to do the thing. And I met a lot of city people who love to play bluegrass music, and also they have gardens and so forth. But I'm not going to distinct, you know, because I really don't know. I'm not, you might think you're looking at somebody that claims to be an expert, but I'm not. Because as I said, I'm born and half raised in West Virginia, and I have a lot of fun playing what they call bluegrass music today. And I play with a lot of groups, recorded with a lot, traveled a lot. But I'll tell you, there's nothing could ever fall out of the sky and bless me or make me some kind of a rich dude that I forget who the friends were that I met on the way up. And I still don't say I'm on top of this thing yet. But I've been climbing, as they say, I've been climbing this ladder of success for almost 38 years. Now, I don't know how successful I am, but I sure can climb ladders. We got a request to do there in about the gear of F, if you will, please. You're the boss. I'm working for you. Would you let me boss you for about 10 minutes while we sit?
You can do anything you want.
How about giving me that F chord right
sure.
there? I swear by it.
That's fine.
I wrote that. I like to do a song, an old-timer that I'm very fond of. Back, it was amongst those songs that I heard when I was a kid and learned to take a liking to mountain-style music or American folk music, bluegrass, country, hillbilly. They got so many labels for today, I would never try to distinguish between two musics and put a label on it myself. I wouldn't want that responsibility to be kind of wrong, would you? But I very well remember Riley Puckett and the Gid Tanner and the Skillet Lickers, the Carter family, then the Monroe Brothers came along, and man, I thought that was really uptown fast bluegrass music, as they say bluegrass today. And then, Bill and Charlie are two good businessmen, you can bet your boots on that, and a lot of people have learned from Bill and Charlie. And as far as I'm concerned on who started bluegrass music, I think Bill and Charlie did do it. If you want to label it, but some says, well, you had to play this instrument and you had to play that to become bluegrass. If there had been a five-string banjo pick three-finger style back when Bill and Charlie was on the road with their little group, don't think they wouldn't have got him, because they would have. Whoever he may have been or whereabouts. But sometimes things come along just in time to make, as we say, history, right? Still an old-time Carter family tune a lot of folks have done and hashed and rehashed and recorded. And I think Linda Ronstadt opened it up. That's one I remember very well called I Never Will Marry. One evening as I rambled along the seashore, the wind it did whistle and the waters did roar. so lonesome in the waters around. I never will marry or be no man's wife. I expect to live single all the days of my life. The shells in the ocean will be my deathbed. The fish in deep water swam over my much. Last time I got a big hand like that was upside of my head. Had a lot of fun last night over to the ice house there, jamming with the Cooter and all the boys there. Cooter, you got a name now. You're Brandy, you know. Tell you what we're going to do. Let's try to claw hammer one. What do you?
Right.
When I say let's, us. That
you
means
can do it.
You gotta help me, you know. We're gonna tune the banjo in the C chord. Thanks for the help. Didn't make you do that, won't it? I turned it two or three times. I see she kept going, really? Oh, that last one, I never knew that. Still wiping sweat here. It's really warm. I brought my wife with me. She's outside there, sitting under a tree somewhere. I'd rather take her with me than have to kiss her goodbye. She's a nice old gal, though. She's raised on a farm over there in Maryland. She knows what it is to raise tobacco and run a tractor and all that. But we're like other people who are married. I like married life. I've been married 39 years, I guess, or maybe 40 by now. And the first 8 or 10 years I thought was pretty successful. Then one day her laryngitis cleared right up. We get into little fights once in a while, you know, around the house there. It hadn't been a month and a half ago that her and I were fighting around the house, and But you know, had nothing against women's lib now, folks, nothing. But just like a woman later, she came to me on her knees. Yeah, dared me to come out from under the bed where she could get at me. Now, we get along pretty fair there. We take, at my house there, to keep it intact, to keep everything, we take a week about being boss, you know, her and I do. Except I never know when my week is. We have 9 children, her and I do. I was married once before. I married a girl out of Beckley, West Virginia, and between her and the banjo here, she didn't stay, and her and I had 4 children, so I'm a father of 13, and that doesn't make me anything an authority on children and their behavior, or child psychology, or whatever you want to call it. Each one has a different character, and they're all different kids. I am a father of 13 children. There's no joking about that. My second wife and I, we had 9, as I said, and we didn't plan it that way, just, you know, like, but her hearing is bad. That's what happened. That's why we had all those kids, because on account of her hearing. I'd go out on the road playing my banjo, and I'd be gone for a couple of weeks, you know, and I'd come home, and her and I would sit around watching TV with the old fireplace at late at night. Kids would all go to bed, you know, and so that's what I was waiting for, and I'd whisper to Mom, you know, after the kids had gone to bed, I said, okay, do you want to go to sleep or what? And she'd say, what, every time. Let's play a little tune there. Here's one that I wrote. I wrote and recorded the song here, and after I wrote this song, you know, I still had enough wood left over to cook supper with the next day. And we called it Things in Life, and I'm really proud to have had a little part in this thing. Charlie Waller and the Country Gentlemen, they did it, and there's another bunch of good pickers out of California, and I understand that they were to be here this week, last week, next week, or the week after.
That's Lori's part. Lori Lewis.
Hey! There's a fine. That lady plays some fine fiddle over there. Does it insult you if I call it a bluegrass fiddle? Okay, because if I don't call it that, I might offend somebody else, you know. But you know how it goes. Some do, some overdo, some never do. How do you do? Here's a song we just called it Things in Life, and we live by that. Thank you. got some other people in the Bluegrass thing that wanted to do something here.
It's all right.
I want to take a look, want to ask some questions. Or
yeah.
If anybody want to ask any questions or requests or just, this is your show, you paid for it. I beg your pardon, sir.
Could you do Tragic Romance?
What? Well, you know, on the, are you thinking about somebody that I did it with?
Yeah,
Everett Lilly sang that song by rights. He really did. Usually, there's another friend of mine who when I go up in the North Country and play, Herb Applin, and he sings tenor. We do it as a duet now. And we fell into that little category, and I don't think I could sing that worth a hoot as a solo. Think what I'll do. Let me give it just a little thought, will you?
There's a question over there.
I was wondering if you'd do Black Diamond for you.
I sure will.
How about that song about the monkey?
Oh, you mean that the latest bluegrass tune that's on the press today? No, I'm kidding about that now. I played a bluegrass festival somewhere, and things just weren't going too awfully good with the material I'd been doing, and I just happened to get a silly idea. Did you ever do that? And I changed that program right away. I done a song called You're Bound to Look Like a Monkey When You Grow Old, and tore the place up. I said, now I told you there's a good bluegrass number, folks. I don't know who bought it, who didn't. I left happy. Let's go back to our F chord again there. George, please. I like to play an F along, a lot on a banjo. Put your fifth string in A chord and play in the regular F position. A and F goes together. There's a song called When You Slide Down the Banister of Life, Remember Me as a Splinter in Your Career. I'd like to remind you straight off of, we don't have so much fun, but we sure make a lot of money. Did you hear me choke when I said that, didn't you? Don't ever slap your baby in the face. Nature provided a better place. Thank you, fiddler. Thank you. I'll brag on your fiddle playing some more. He's a good fiddle player. Here's one called You're Bound to Look Like a Monkey When You Grow Old, and I didn't do any research on this. If you want to, you can. And for about $6-$7, nobody claims it could be yours. I'm a guy who tells it straight from shoulder like it is. I don't go down to the Library of Congress and do a lot of research work and see who's forgot to pay their dues on the song so I can steal it for $7. I'm gonna do it. If I don't write one, I'm gonna put my name on it. Bound to Look Like a Monkey. All you youngsters have never heard this bluegrass song, why don't you pay special attention to the lyrics on it? Have you heard it? Say you heard it here first. Face, you belong to the monkey race, and you're bound to look like a monkey when you grow old. When you grow old, when you grow old, yes, you're bound to look like a monkey when you grow old. I can tell by your knees you've been climbing up coconut trees, and you're bound to look like a monkey when you grow old. When you grow old, when you grow old, oh, you're bound to look like a monkey when you grow old. What's a tough one?
Hard.
A technique.
I can tell by your nose you've been swinging by your toes, and you're bound to look like a monkey when you grow old. When you grow old, when you grow old, yes, you're bound to look like a monkey when you grow old. I can tell by your chin that a monkey was your kin, and you're bound to look like a monkey when you grow old. When you grow old, when you grow old, oh, you're bound to look like a monkey when you grow old. I can tell by your jaw that a monkey was your paw, and you're bound to look like a monkey when you grow old. When you grow old, when you grow old. Oh, you're bound to look like a monkey when you grow old.
That's the evolution song.
They teach that in West Virginia?
Yeah, they taught me that in West Virginia. Yes, sir.
You don't sing that in fundamentalist country, do you?
No, sir. No, sir. You're absolutely right on that. By the way, before let me make a note of that. I've been in trouble a couple times over that song. Really, I have. It was on an old cylinder when I was a kid, and I can remember climbing up on a little bench thing there and cranking up the old machine and then releasing the spring and letting her go like that. And there's several of them, but the history will never be known on them and never be rewritten. It's trying to be forgotten, you know, forever. They weren't exactly risque, but they may have been a hindrance to the human society. I don't know. Glad to see you. We got a lot of celebrities here. My goodness sakes. What do they call your band, man? The Grand Street? Y'all doing a fine, fine job, and your records are playing on WAMU out in Washington, Maryland University. Gary Henderson, Dick Spotswood, and all those folks. I think you did a beautiful job on that song. Almost cried when heard it. Said, boy, they sure showed me up, didn't they? I'd like to remind, thank you for the help. I got a royalty check immediately after you folks cut it for 61 cents, and I framed it. So you can tell they're selling like hotcakes now, you know. But I do believe we're going to have to eat every one of them.
Can you speak of what it was like playing bluegrass at the beginning?
I like to talk about that quite a bit sometimes. Sometimes I have a better version of what I like to say than I do at other times. Of course, there's so many memories and so many ways. It's like playing a guitar. You can turn it around and make it look this way, you know. In the early days, people weren't concerned. Most of them are concerned today about money, you know. If you're going to book somebody, well, if you don't pay the big, big bucks, and entertainers are paid very high. They're highly paid. And they have to watch how they invested for their older age, for security and retirement and all that. But the good days when I was playing with, and the money was just enough to get by with, and please forgive me, sir, I'm not saying that I'm making millions of dollars today, but I'm active in the business and I make a good living, and I've raised 13 kids on it, and that'll be written in my little book and my little hall of fame when I go out to say that I done it and I done it my way. I didn't get rich, but man, at the memories and the fun I had. I've got fortunes in memories. But when I was playing just to survive, those were the greatest years of all. And I never set any goals in this thing. I never did do it. Because, somewhere down the line, I have seen people who have set a goal and they've went for it. And I've seen this preached on television by some high quality people. If you set a goal and go after it, you can do it. But I've seen some people commit suicide and take dope and ruin their whole lives too because their goal didn't materialize after about 6 or 8 or 10 years. They expect it right away, you know what I mean? But I do say, the way I look at it as an old country boy, corn-fed and hand-spanked and brought up in the coal mining country, to set a goal is, to me, is saying, well, here's what I want to do, and then you go do it. I want to play the banjo. I want to build toys for kids. If you will pursue that, you can make it work because you get better at it and get recognized at it. It's got to work. You can't do it. But hear people say, I'm going to set a goal and do something, and hey, I'm going to be a millionaire in about 8 or 10 years and retire like that. I've seen failures in that, haven't you? Have you ever seen that?
Sure.
And it's a shame the way the lives of people turn out. And I, as I say, I'm not telling you that I'm an authority on anything at all. But what I've seen, sometimes I just kind of lock it into a little pocket of my own, keep it as a memory, you know. But I like to play the music, and when I was playing for nothing, practically, I believe that's the most happiest days of my life. Riding up down the roads in an old 35 Chevrolet and had the half moon hubcaps on there, and when you got tired, you just pulled over by a little creek somewhere and you popped the hubcap off of the old car and filled it full of water. That was your mirror to shave in. You take the other side off and set it over between two big rocks and put some little leaves under there and heat that water up to shave with on the road. If a hillbilly had a guitar or a banjo and a shaving kit back then, he's in business. And a couple of wheels to get him there. Sleep in somebody's barn in a haystack or whatever, you know.
How'd you learn to pick? Did you see it on TV or something?
No, sir, I really didn't. My mom and daddy both played a banjo, and I guess that's why I got stuck with this thing here. Of course, there's other reasons that went along that the banjos got sounding different and different artists played them. My mother and daddy frailed the banjo, and they played two-finger banjo. Well, we played bare fingers with no picks on two fingers. I'd never seen a pair of picks. And there was an old traveling salesman used to come through our part of the country, and he carried a big leather pouch on his back. He sold lady house shoes and ladies' dresses. And he told me that I used to listen to the Grand Ole Opry on the Wallwright music program when Bill Monroe was the famous bluegrass king, and still is, you gotta say that. And he had some other fellows with him, had Chubby Wise and Lester Flatt and Earl Scruggs were part of the bluegrass Kentucky boys there, and I used to listen to this guy, Earl Scruggs, play a banjo, and I knew that he was doing something different from what I was doing, and it took me an awful long time to figure it out. I could pick a little two-finger, and I could frail, but I couldn't make a banjo sound like that guy could. And the Grand Ole Opry was the biggest thing back then on the airways to be able to hear a banjo played by anybody who could play it, you know what I mean? To be recognized and introduced to the public, as Earl done it. But I knew he was doing something different. The old peddler came through my part of the country selling all those goods, told me that he knew this fella, Scrubs, he called him. Said, I get to Nashville once in a while, and I asked him, how does he play a banjo, you know? And he told me that he had three picks on his fingers. And he says, he's wearing them backwards. Now, that made a lot of sense to me. He couldn't describe it to me, but he said he's wearing them backwards picks on his finger. So, as time rolled on, I didn't know how he could wear a pick backwards. I tried to take a Prince Albert can and fashion a pair of picks out of the two metals, and I never did get a thumb pick made for it. And I had to drive 20 miles into Beckley, West Virginia to a little music store there who was just lucky enough to have two thumb picks lying around. Musicians never passed through that town. They didn't buy many picks and strings there. And I ruined the best pair of scissors that my mother had cutting on the Prince Albert tobacco cans. And I really got a scolding for that. And every time I'd pick up the banjo and try to play it, I'd have to go refile them because I aimed to turn them. I left a little burr, you know, and hit hang up in them strings, something terrible. Make your fingers bleed. You could never get enough sandpaper to get them down right. I finally gave up on that idea. And must have been a month or a half went by, and a fella drove me to Whitesville, West Virginia, and he knew of a music store there. And he found me some picks, and I turned them every which way but right and wrong and trying to learn how to play that banjo. And somebody told me that you play it like you do two fingers, and you put your picks on to match your finger that way. So this is the way I put them on. I didn't look in the mirror at myself, but after I got them stuck on that finger like that, you can't get music that way. But it worked out that where I kept on doing this, and I'd listen to that Grand Ole Opry every night. And if you can remember, I'm sure you can, on all the gin mills and the pubs through the Route 3 south toward Whitesville and Beckley, and they used to, all the pubs and the gin mills had jukeboxes then, and the big hot licks were then as Bill Monroe and his bluegrass boys in country music, you know, and the bluegrass breakdown was the first, I think, introduced as a five-string banjo instrumental portion on it. And I had a terrible time learning to play that, and I'd still go to visit my two friends, Everett and B. Lilly, the Lilly brothers, who lived at Clear Creek, West Virginia. And we'd sit under the apple trees and play all day long. And some days we wouldn't accomplish much, and some days we would. And then the Lilly brothers went to Knoxville, Tennessee, to work on the midday merry-go-round they had there. Mr. Kaz Walker had something to do with it. And Lynn Davis and Molly O'Day, who used to be a very young lady singer named Dixie Lee, and then she changed her name to Molly O'Day. She married Lynn Davis. And the Lilly brothers were working with Lynn and Molly O'Day on the program there. I believe that was 1947. That was about 1944. Because there's a fellow named Lost John. I can't never remember his last name. Maybe Smith or Lost John Jones or somebody. Had a hot song out during World War II called Rainbow at Midnight. And he picked up this banjo player by the name Earl Scruggs and took him to Knoxville. And the Rainbow at Midnight was Lost John's hottest number. And he said, well, I'm going to take this five-string banjo player and go to Nashville, Tennessee, and get on the Grand Ole Opry, and I'm going to make a lot of money. Well, he took Earl, he went to Nashville, and I'd say it was about 2 weeks later, Bill Monroe had him, as this ever-changing bluegrass world does. But the Lilly Brothers had watched him play with, I don't know who, through a glass window in the radio control room station there. Earl was playing on Knoxville, too. So the Lilly Brothers would be transcribing around in one room, like over here. They had, you know, big old 18-inch transcriptions they used to make. What, an hour and a half long if you wanted to go on a road somewhere and they were good enough to let you, a radio station, so you'd go out and make $3. They'd let you transcribe your program. They'd play it while you're gone. Some were lucky and some weren't. So the guitar player, B. Lilly, was watching Earl Scruggs play the banjo through the glass window in the studio while they got a break from recording on their side of the studio. And he went around and told his brother Everett, come on, once you see a guy play a banjo, a funny way. And Everett said, well, how's he playing it a funny way? And B says, I can't describe it to you. He's doing his fingers this way with a bunch of picks on him. I want you to see it. Everett said, I don't want to hear it. If he's not frailing the banjo the way I like it, forget about it. But after about 15 or 20 minutes of persuasion, he did go see the guy play the banjo, and he said it's something to behold. He'd never seen that before, you know. And both Lilly Brothers are quite a bit older than I am. 4 years, one of them's 3 years, one's 5.5 years, something like that, older than I am. And they were playing music. I very well remember the WCHS Charleston, West Virginia, had the old Farm Hour in 1939. And they used to drive by my house, you know, with their mandolins and guitars, and no cases for them. If they were lucky enough to steal one of their mother's pillowcases to keep a little rain off of it, that's the way they carried their instruments at the radio station. I say, well, am I still on the same subject? You notice the West Virginia folks don't talk much. Now, those were the good days when there wasn't so much money to ruin it. I guess that kind of dates back to somebody asked Jethro Burns, does he read music? He said, I don't read enough to hurt my picking.
Did you know Uncle Dave, mate?
You know, I never met Uncle Dave in my life. I never did. And I never met another idol of mine in the younger days, Hank Williams. I didn't meet him. He died in Oak Hill, West Virginia. He was always going somewhere, and I was going somewhere. Yes, sir?
How did you happen to meet up with Bill Monroe?
Bill Monroe used to come into Whitesville, West Virginia. There's a little theater there called the Boone Theater. He used to come there, and he had an old 41 Chevrolet. It was a car and a half. You've seen those Chevrolet limousines. Bill used to have one painted it red, white, and blue, and him and Earl all used to ride it. And we'd go to Whitesville and see the show. And Bill was having a little bit of trouble with some guitar picker. That was before he got Lester. And he wanted to hire B. Lilly. And so, you know, Bill likes to go around, shake hands with folks, and talk with people. And that's how we knowed Bill Monroe. I went to Nashville in 1956, I believe it was. I was hoping to land a job with Stoney Cooper and Wilma Lee, because they are such nice people. It's not that I'm not prejudiced, but it's not that I favored their music or this guy's music or this one more than the others, but they were such great people. And that, to me, great people means an awful lot, you know, to be around and to be associated with, whether they play my style of music or not. And I can get along with those people. I can learn to play theirs or they can learn to play mine. So it didn't materialize. They were nice folks. They had a banjo player when I got there. And his notice weren't up and wouldn't be for a while, and I couldn't sit down and wait, and Bill had an opening, so I jumped at it. Some rough days out there. One day I might get to write the book.
you play any Hank Williams?
Very little. Usually I like a foot pedal steel when I try to do that, but seldom do I do country music. I mean true, what I call true country, like Hank. There's a good country music singer sitting right there. We sang so much over to Ice House last night and stayed up so late. And old jokes like us shouldn't have been out that late, should we?
Did you hit a lick or two of the old two-finger style?
It's been a while since I've done it. Yeah, I'll try. If I can get it to bounce up and down there right, I'll try that for you. Take me home to the sweet sunny south. Thank you. That's the way I learned to play two finger. Of course, a lot of that's been perfected now. They got ways they can play two fingers sound like eight blade. You know, Zippo. Sound like a squirrel cutting on two hickory nuts at once in a 100-foot tree, don't you? I say let's do a little bit of old Reuben strain. Drunk to get his little woman out of jail. If you don't think I'll steal, just show me a sack of meal, and I'll carry it to my shanty down the road. Woman says so, I'll railroad no more. I'll sidetrack my train and go home. Zoe! Sounds almost like I know what I'm doing, don't it?
Don't tell him.
Never tell. Must have been drunk when he found his watch and trunk to get his little woman out of jail. Thank you. Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. I'd rather answer a few questions if I can. Yes, sir?
Did you ever have to play baseball with Bill Monroe's team?
A little bit of baseball, yes, sir. Just before show, we'd always had 3 or 4 hours to kill. We'd have our gloves and the balls out on the field. Of course, you know, Bill, he requested you wear a white shirt and a tie back then. That was the hot lick, as they say, you know. So you talk about some dusty musicians. We went on stage that night, boy. Sliding in the home there. Them white shirts looked like they'd never seen a bit of detergent. So we knew we'd accomplish something out there we were set out to do. And we'd go on the stage and grinning and barreting, playing, having a good time. I enjoyed working with Monroe. He's a heck of a man, really. And we used to go, regardless of the stories you could hear, you can actually believe when I tell you the truth. I won't lie. Did I ever lie to you? Bill is a fine guy, really. We'd play baseball together. He had a pair of Kentucky mules, and I'd go out to the farm with him, and we'd plow, hand plow them old mules, you know. And he had about 35 dogs. We'd take that Cadillac limousine, hook it up to an old U-Haul trailer, and load about 15 dogs in that thing, and go out on them Kentucky hills and run them foxes till the sun come up the next morning. It's fun. But, you know, you have to get a little rest once in a while, though. The only thing about it, Bill Monroe was not making any money. Not hardly enough to survive. You got to give that man credit. He stuck to his guns with his bluegrass music, and it did take a turn and came right back to him. I think Bill Monroe is the father of bluegrass music, and who done the most for it? Lester Nerdle done an awful lot, Foggy Mountain Boys, for bluegrass music. They got it into some colleges and on the tube and what have you. That was a big shot in the arm. And, of course, when they got the big shot in the arm, they got the sponsors, like the Martha White Flower and the Beverly Hillbilly thing. And Bill Monroe didn't have a sponsor, and he couldn't keep a banjo player over 2 weeks. He'd starve out, he'd leave. And that hurts a band right there when a man leaves. And there is some that won't stay for the money. Money will not keep a man nowhere if he's not happy, you know. But you couldn't work for a nicer fellow than Bill Monroe, honest. He never said one bad word to me in his life. He never told me how to play. Well, even in 1956, there weren't too many well-known banjo players, you know, people. WVA, I've only guested there a few times, even in 1947, 46 and 47, when the Lilly Brothers were working regular there with a fellow named Red Belcher and his Kentucky Ridge Runners. Well, that left me over in West Virginia, and they had one banjo player they couldn't use too, but on their vacations, they would come into the hometown over. We'd go out and we'd play the memorial buildings around Hinton, West Virginia, and Beckley, and then also the Nimitz Airport. We play airports. We play where we get a gig, man.
You lived up in Boston for quite a while, around Boston, right?
Yep. In 1952, a gentleman who was a student at MIT came through Raleigh, North Carolina to see the Flat and Scruggs show, and he found Everett Lilly was with the Foggy Mountain Boys at the time, and Everett had been previously with my friend Tex Logan, is who I'm speaking of. And he came down through Raleigh, North Carolina, and asked Everett Lilly, do you ever think you will go back with your brother as a duet team with your brother? And he says he'd like to do that very much, because two brothers, if they can sing and play, belong together, you know. Some of them don't get along so good. That's neither here nor there, me. So in 1952, the Lilly Brothers and I went to Boston, Massachusetts, and we began to play some bluegrass music on a radio station up there. And we had two radio programs a day, and we had a night spot at night. We played a nightclub, a very fine nightclub. You had to have white shoes and a tie to get on that joker, get inside that rat then. And we worked that for quite some time, and later we booked, we got to talking about, we didn't call it bluegrass, we called it country music. And next thing you know, they began to book guys like Minnie Pearl, Grandpa Jones, Pee Wee King and the Golden West Cowboys, Cisco Kid and Pancho, and just a great big show, and the Boston Gardens would have rodeos when they'd add entertainment to that too. We went up there with our bluegrass music, as it's called today, and I guess we worked about 6 months on the radio station. We didn't get a postcard from nobody. Says, boys, we better get out of this thing right away because nobody's not listening or they won't send us a postcard or whatever. And when we told them one day that how tickled we'd be if we could just get some kind of piece of mail from somebody who was listening to our program out there. And we began to get a few postcards, and then here they came right on. Then people would request, do you have a picture of your group, you know? And we sent them a picture, and we wore Confederate uniforms at that time. And we'd send some pictures out. We sold them, let's put it that way. We sold pictures on the air. And we'd get mail from it, you know. Folks said, hey, your music's kind of strange to us, and since you're hillbillies, and your picture looks like you do wear shoes, and you don't have a hound dog and a jug of corn liquor on your shoulder, and, that's not exactly what we thought hillbillies were. And we kind of broke the ice. We began to get a little mail, so we wound up staying 22 years in New England area. playing our folk music and bluegrass music and what have you. And out of New England right today comes some real fine country and bluegrass pickers, I'm telling you. Right over there sits one of them. he's growing older into this thing too. Done gone through puberty. Paul. He gone through puberty there. He shaved twice, cut his leg both times.
Can you recommend any good festivals?
Yes, sir, I really can. And I want to say one thing. I don't down the south and up this one, but I like to play the bluegrass shows in the north because I spend so much time there. The Berkshire Mountain Show is a fine one. And there's also the Washington County Fairgrounds in Saratoga Springs. Go Route 9 east, I believe, new Route 9 south out of Saratoga Springs, and go into the Washington County Fairgrounds. A gentleman by the name of Smokey Green has a real fine show. And they're still wondering today why he doesn't have one security people on the show at all. You don't need it. There's no police up there carrying guns and billy clubs. Nobody has to watch the gate. Some of the finest folks you have ever visited at a bluegrass show. That's two. Also one, there's one at Thomas Point Beach, Maine, Labor Day. We had one 2 weeks ago there. And they have some fine, fine shows. They're well managed. You might see somebody holding a beer over there and drinking it, but they're minding their business. They're not bothering nobody, and so, you know. You can't condemn a bluegrass show because you've seen one person have a drink or one too many, you know. I like to go play those shows where children are welcome and down-home folks, and that's the kind of shows I hang out with.
When is the one in Saratoga?
August. I don't have my book with me to tell you exact date on that. There's a good little mini bluegrass show in Boxborough, Massachusetts, right near Harvard, Massachusetts. Not Harvard College, but there's a little town called Harvard just out on 495, 20 miles out of Cambridge, on Route 111. And it's at a Rod and Gun Club run by Ken Marcus, and it's a fine little bluegrass show. That is, I believe, August 3, 4, 5, or 2, 3, 4. And the next following week after that is the Smoky Green Show out of Saratoga Springs. You haven't been to that one? They're real fine, and of course they have entertainment at Harpers Ferry, West Virginia, every June sometimes, and I get to make that. There's quite a few good bluegrass shows, and I know there's a lot of people who don't go to them because they're not sure of what's going on. Yep.
Did you play around Washington, D.C.? Did you ever go on Jimmy Dean's program?
Me and Buzz Busby and the Bayou Boys had a TV show opposite of Jimmy Dean on Channel 4. And our studios were in the Sheridan Park Hotel. Ours was from, 12 to 12:30 every day, and Jimmy's was on a little later in the evening. Briggs Hot Dogs, Jimmy Dean's. I stayed there around about 2 years, I guess. And then we moved to KWKH in Shreveport, Louisiana, and played with some of the younger folks coming up and made a big name for themselves, like guys like Elvis, Johnny Horton, the three Browns, Maxine, Jim Edward, and Bonnie Brown, here today and going tomorrow. And
you knew Elvis?
Yeah.
What was he like?
Just a little shaved head country boy like me at that time. Then I went back up to Boston for a second hitch with the Lilly Brothers. And Ed Sullivan had a TV show came out of New York, and nobody had heard of Elvis. I kept saying, "Hey, y'all guy, you know a guy named, you ever heard of a guy named Elvis?" No, nobody heard of him. Not long after that, when Ed Sullivan had that show out of New York, Elvis Presley got on that show, and next day, everybody around New York, Boston, and what have you, they knew Elvis. Did I tear anything up there when I did that?
I don't think so. I think Michael tied you down there.
Okay, got to tape me into the chair there. And that takes care of the Washington, D.C. thing. I'm kind of hoarse today. I don't know what part of the horse I am, but I'm that part.
Well, maybe play another one or so.
We're going to pick another little tune here of some sort, Black Diamond. We can do that again. And then we're going to pause for station identification. And we won't be back right spasmodically. We'll be back sometime this evening, won't we?
Tomorrow evening.
Tomorrow evening? All right.
Concert tomorrow evening at the...
So we'll be calling for you in the buckboard tomorrow evening. So ride on up and tie your mule to the fire plug and come on down. We'll kick our shoes off and have a stinking good time. See, we pick a little BD here, Black Diamond. Got to get me loose.